Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Reiki Touch by Lauren, and she can be reached at 954-464-0087. Our guest tonight is Dr. Piero Calvi-Parisetti, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. And we're back to you, Bob.
Yeah, and I think that tonight, because Piero is one of our favorite people, we're going to start right in because...
We've made a lot of enemies.
Well, it's the truth. Dr. Piero Calvi-Parisetti is a man of many interests. He's a medical doctor, psychotherapist, a bereavement counselor, author, afterlife scholar, and former university professor and humanitarian advisor to the United Nations. We're both very proud that he's a member of Forever Family Foundation Scientific Advisory Board. And his approach to working with the bereaved matches up perfectly with the goals of the foundation. He's the author of 21 Days into the Afterlife, and his new book, which we're going to talk about tonight, is entitled Adventures in Psychical Research, A Medical Doctor's Exploration of the Nature of Consciousness and Its Survival to Bodily Death. To learn more, his website is drparisetti.com, and that's D-R, and then Parisetti, P-A-R-I-S-E-T-T-I.com. Welcome, my friend Piero.
Hello, dear Fran. Hello, dear Bob. What a pleasure being here with you tonight.
And I know that it's in the wee hours of the morning where you are.
It's 1 o'clock. It's not okay. Too bad. It's not too bad.
Well, I forgot to mention also your another thing that you do, which is a professional jazz musician. So, having said that, I suspect that you've been up in the wee hours a few nights here and there.
Hi, and funnily enough, I'm not even an hour back from a wee jam session downtown Glasgow. So you see, we combine different interests.
Yeah, absolutely. So for quite a while, I, along with many of our members, have been reading these blogs you've been writing. I call it, it's a blog, but they're really articles that are well thought out. And we always found them interesting because not only does it stimulate intellectual curiosity, but you're not afraid to state what you know to be true. And that's one of the things that we do love about you. So as you were writing each article, did you entertain the idea that it would one day result in a book?
No, I did not at all, Bob. I did not at all. When I started this, you know, as I continue my process of what we call continuing education, because, you know, I'm passionate about psychical research in general, so I keep reading stuff. And as I read stuff, I have this wee, you know, this colored stickers that I put into books because I find ideas that may develop into a blog article, something that perhaps is less known by the public. I'm not talking about the general public. I write for a public who's already into this kind of things and has an interest and a little bit of background and knowledge. And when you get into the literature for psychical research, it is true that you tend to find the main themes and certain examples and certain studies and pieces of evidence that keep coming back again and again. And but other times I do come across other pieces of evidence, other articles or studies or whatever findings of research that are lesser known. And I like to bring these to the attention of my public. And other times I have my own reflections, my own ideas that I want to share with my readership. And so, to be completely honest, no, I've been writing these blogs since August 2013. And I had no idea that this would come together in a book format. But then I realized that there were a few things that would have made this good material for a book. You know, I think the style is pretty consistent. The subjects are pretty consistent. I'm not interested in the weird or the unexplicable per se. I'm not even, although yes, I am interested in psychical research in general, but I have a particular angle that perhaps some of our listeners already know, because I'm interested in applied psychical research, not only the fundamental side of things, but the applied side of things. Now, I mean, we've all understood, at least many of us have understood, based on the evidence that I keep saying, mind cannot be reduced to the activity of the physical brain. Humans do have psychic powers. And what is most important, significant aspects of human personality survive physical death. And that's very good. And we keep reading and studying about these things. But my question has been for the last few years, what do we do with this information? How can we apply the results of psychical research? And that's the angle I take, and that's the angle that you find in my writings, really interspersed. That's the underlying theme. So when I realized that there was a consistency of themes, there was a consistency of language, there was, as I say, the desire of saying something, you know, because some of the blogs you see around are just made to fill up web pages, to get hits and to get public. Here, I dare say that my intention was to say something, to communicate ideas, to share ideas and stimulate discussion. I made a very, very long story out of a small thing in saying that at some stage I realized that this would have made good material for a book, and so the book was indeed produced.
Yeah, and the book we're talking about is Adventures in Psychical Research. So, I mean, if you want to catch up on Dr. Parasetti's blog articles, you can buy the book. But if you want to also catch future things, is there a link to your blog on your website on drparasetti.com?
In fact, the website is the blog, basically.
Okay.
Is
right.
The blog. There are the books. There are a couple of free resources for the bereaved, but the website basically consists of the blog.
Okay. Now you developed this wonderful course to help people in grief. It was very innovative. You kind of introduced me to a term that I wasn't familiar with, you know, bibliotherapy. Can you explain that for those who might not be familiar with the word? I know I certainly wasn't. What is bibliotherapy?
Very, very happily, very happily. Let's take, you know, one step backwards and look at cognitive behavior therapy. Cognitive behavior psychotherapy was developed in the 50s in the United States by a group of originally Freudian psychoanalysts who were very frustrated at the fact that they were, you know, trying to heal people suffering from depressions. And after 10, 12, 15 years of psychotherapy, you know, five times a week, that's the old Freudian psychotherapy, they could see no improvement in people suffering from depression. So they started thinking, they looked at the way the brain is wired, they looked at neurophysiology research, And they developed cognitive therapy, which we very summarily can describe as the psychological treatment of thoughts. In a nutshell, because this is not what we want to say here, in a nutshell, cognitive therapy teaches you to think non-negatively. It does not teach you to think positively. That has been proved to have basically no long-term effect, but it teaches you to correct negative thoughts that you have when you are depressed and to reformulate them in a more balanced, realistic way. Cognitive therapy has been evaluated by the largest study in the history of medicine and has been found superior in its effectiveness to, obviously, I say obviously because I have an experience of that, it's superior to traditional psychotherapy, superior to Prozac and the various molecules that are available, the drugs, and superior to the combination of traditional psychotherapy, the old psychotherapy, and antidepressant drugs. So it is really is a magic bullet, and it is no mystery that here in the UK it is the treatment of choice and has been the treatment of choice for many years for depression. Now, what is extraordinarily interesting is that research shows that for mild and moderate forms of depression, you can basically have the same effects, the same healing positive effects by going through a self-help workbook based on cognitive therapy. So either you go to a therapist and have your, it's not cognitive therapy typically is not a long course of therapy. In maximum 36 sessions, you're out. And this very interesting research shows that not for the serious, severe depression, you really need the relationship with a therapist and a clinical setting. But for a mild and moderate, even the medium level depression, reading a book, reading a book, biblios, the Greek term for book. So reading a self-help book, particularly these workbooks that have you doing exercises and writing down things in the book, has the same beneficial effects than a normal course of psychotherapy with a trained counselor.
And it's, you know, it must be, well, we're going to have to go to a break, but it must be frustrating because, as you said, it is somewhat of a magic bullet, and the trick is to make more people aware of it, and we'll talk a little bit more about that after the break. So we're talking with Dr. Piero Calvi Parasetti. The book is Adventures in Psychical Research. We have a lot more to talk about, so stay with us. We'll be back.
Hello, my name is Lauren Halpern, and I'm a Reiki master. I enjoy bringing peace and inspiration to people. I conduct healing circles with inspiration, meditation, and Reiki at different community developments, religious institutions, and many other locations. People react so wonderfully to my events. For more information, please contact me, Reiki Touch by Lauren at 954-464-0087. That's 954-464-0087, or email me at laurenhalpern@gmail.com. laurenhalpern@gmail.com.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken, even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world, but for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential, and research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Piero Calvi Parasetti. Our sponsor is Reiki Touch by Lauren, and she could be reached at 954-464-0087. Bob?
And we're back with Dr. Piero Calvi Parasetti. Piero, from a psychotherapy perspective, when we're talking about people that are in grief because of the death of a loved one, what is it that you think is at the core of the grief? Is it the finality, you know, the finality of death, the thought that that people are into nothingness, and you know, is that the biggest suspect of in the grief process?
Yes and no. Yes okay. And no. Let me perhaps, before I answer this very specific and very relevant question, let me perhaps slightly correct something you said before the break. You said that we need more people to know about cognitive therapy, and perhaps that is not true. As I repeat again, I mean, cognitive behavioral therapy per se is well established as the treatment of choice for depression, for panic attacks, and other psychological, emotional ailments. What we need to push, what I think that we need to push, is the application of the principles of cognitive therapy, which we described as thought restructuring, learning to think in a less negative way, to grief recovery, because that link has not really been made. So cognitive therapy, well established for depression in general. Let's see what we can learn from that approach and use it and apply it to the situation of bereavement. Now, back to your very relevant, important question. As a therapist, I know, and cognitive therapy says this very clearly, whatever you suffer from, there is a component of that suffering which is unavoidable, cannot be avoidable. There's no therapy, there's no approach, there's no method that can take away a part of the pain that we experience as humans. I'll make you an example and then we move to grief. If, God forbid, my wife were to leave me, I would suffer like, you know, a slaughtered cow. And a part of that pain is linked to the fact that my wife, whom I dearly love, is not with me anymore. And that bit, there's nothing to do for that pain. I have to live through it because I'm a man, I'm a human being, and that's a fundamental component of my being human. But there's another part of the pain. If I think my wife has left me, therefore I am unlovable, nobody will love me anymore, or thoughts like that, I go down a train of thoughts which is very damaging, is unrealistic, and I enter into a dimension of pain that can be avoided. Now, move all this to bereavement. There is a substantial part of the pain of bereavement which I think is unavoidable. When we lose somebody we love, the fact that we don't have the physical presence of that person around us engenders a significant part of pain for which, unfortunately, there is nothing to do. We were born with this, and not me, not anybody can take that away. However, there is another part of the pain, I believe, that can and should be avoided. And that part of the pain comes from the thought death equals disappearance. The person whom I loved, who was a person with a story, with memories, with a personality, idiosyncrasies, and crucially, with love for me, has gone. And all that has gone. Like atomized, you know, and highlighted, that's a very difficult word to say, you know, disappeared, completely demolished. That is not true. That does not correspond to the evidence we have. To the best of my intellectual honesty, and as a matter of rationality, not of faith, this is what I'm about to say now, is not a matter of faith, either religious or otherwise. It comes from the fact that I have looked at the evidence, and the evidence tells me that A, human personality survives physical death, and B, as part of the personality, the network of affections, the love that existed before when the person was with us, remains exactly the same. So, thinking that the person has disappeared is unrealistic, is damaging. We should correct that thought by showing people that we actually survive physical death. And the love we feel for the people we are with in life does survive physical death. This corresponds to the facts, the evidence we have.
And you do a wonderful job of encapsulating this evidence from a lot of different disciplines of research, whether they be mediumship or near-death experience, deathbed visions, or after-death communications, etc. So somebody might say, well, all right, I can see somebody that has lost someone, but why should everyone learn about the evidence? What difference will that make? What will you say to that?
Ooh, wow, that's a very difficult question to answer in a few words. Right. I think that first of all, it's very interesting, isn't it? I cannot fathom why this is not the issue number one that people talk about. You know, I think we're all scared of death instinctively. It's a defense mechanism. And don't you find it interesting to find out whether or not there is an afterlife, whether or not, you know, what we call ourselves goes on living after the death of the physical body? And so I find it intellectually interesting, first of all. Secondly, for those of us who did not have an experience of bereavement, thank God, and knowing about life after life can substantially reduce the fear of death. And, you know, that's a big, big, you know, thing to get rid of. And we know, for instance, that those who have had a near-death experience, they have experienced that they've not read anything, you know. They've had an experience on their own skin. They individually experienced this other reality, this non-material reality, and their fear of death is demolished completely and forever. And that is a very good effect. So that would be reason number two. Reason number three, and again, it's a value for me, perhaps it's not a value for other people, but when you're not anguished about your own finality, your own death, people tend to be less materialistic, less attached to, you know, power, financial success, a lot of things that unfortunately seem to be at the roots of a number of evils in our societies in the world. And here again, I want to refer to and quote the experience of those who have had a near-death experience. They come back from this experience transformed. They have lost interest for material possessions and power and success, and instead they're interested in knowledge, in wisdom, in the spiritual and intellectual life. And I think that if more people in the world were interested in this kind of things, the world as such would be a better place. And let me tell you something very interesting as well. And we go back to the bibliotherapy we were talking about. Imagine that some of these psychological and behavioral changes that we see in people who have had a near-death experience show up in people who have only read about near-death experiences. And research shows that the more people read about NDEs, the stronger are these beneficial changes. And here is another motivation for me to work in applied psychical research, to share this world, to share this information, to have people learn and understand things because A, they're interesting, B, they remove the fear of death, C, they promote a value system and a lifestyle which I think is beneficial for humanity at large.
And one thing that you wrote about that you didn't mention is that there's some evidence that seems to show that those who have a knowledge of the afterlife seem to be better prepared, not only better prepared for death, but may very well fare better after they make that transition.
Ha-ha. But here, you know, we enter a territory of speculation. For me, it's always very difficult to cross that barrier because you ask me, and we keep repeating the same words, but I mean, I hope the public will forgive me. Yes, I am convinced that significant aspects of human personality survive physical death. That's to the best of my intellectual honesty, period. That's a given. But now, what happens afterwards, I certainly do not have the same level of certainty. Let's put it this way. My studies indicate that those who speak to us from the other side, we call them discarnate personalities, are who they say they are. Personalities who have survived the death of their physical body. So of that, I'm quite sure. I take that as a fact. Now, if we trust what these people tell us consistently across epochs, across cultures, across different spiritual traditions, they all say the same thing. The same things, rather, when they describe this otherworldly reality. And one of the things they say is that often there is a period of disorientation, of confusion. Many people actually do not realize they have died. And there's all this literature and all these speculations about earthbound spirits who remain, quote-unquote, stuck in the material side of existence for a certain time because they have not realized they have died. They have not realized they've crossed over onto the other side. And also we are told that the early moments, we understand that time as we understand it does not really apply to the spirit world, but still, let's say the early days, the early moments, the early hours, whatever we want to say, in the spirit world might be a little bit confusing even for those who have realized that have died, but they find themselves in a reality which is quite different. Preparing oneself, making friends with death, as the late Professor Fontana, David Fontana, who I consider really a bit of my great source of inspiration, in an address to the British Psychological Association, said these exact words: "We have to make friends with death. We have to get used to the idea of death in this dimension of transition, of moving to another dimension of existence, another level of reality, because this helps us here and helps us there." Remember, and with this I conclude, in the Middle Age in Europe, there was a prayer and people prayed to God, "God, please save me from a sudden death." And this is very strange, very difficult to understand, unless you understand the wisdom that's behind that. A sudden death is a death that catches you when you're unprepared, and therefore what happens afterwards might be confusing, might be in the beginning a negative experience. If you have, quote-unquote, a slow death, and of course I do not mean a painful or a suffering death, but a death for which you have the time to prepare and you have the time to learn so that you know what to expect when you have crossed over, that experience is a lot better.
If anything, it makes logical sense, you know, when you think about it, and especially if you believe that it's part of a bigger picture that we can't see. You made an interesting analogy when you were talking about, you were contemplating the nature of reality, and you were talking about waves in the sea.
Yes, I like that. I like that myself, I must say.
Elaborate on that a little bit. How are we waves in a sea?
One day I thought, you know, I have this picture of a stormy sea close to some cliffs, rocks, you know, a coastline. The sea is very stormy. And you see these huge waves, and those waves are a good representation of perhaps ourselves, isn't it? The waves move, and we move. The waves seem to have a purpose because they move towards shore, and we seem to have a purpose. The waves have their distinct personality. There's no two waves, you know, that look like each other. They are similar in their in the bigger picture, but then when you look at the details, they're very different, and that applies perfectly to us. We all look, broadly speaking, the same, but then you look closely and we're very different from one from each other. And then what happens that the waves approach the coastline, they get bigger, and you get these curls, and then they crash and they die. The waves die. That beautiful formation with the shape, with particularities, with a purpose, with a personality, moving at some stage goes into nothing. And that is also a fitting parallel for you know, a paragon, an analogy for the our deepest fears. You know, we have a personality, we have an intention, a purpose, we move towards something, but at some stage all that disappears because we die. And then I say to myself, hold on a sec, but what are the waves before becoming waves and after they seemingly disappeared? They are the sea. There's no difference between the waves and the sea. The waves are temporary, ever-changing manifestations of the sea. And so I like to think of human beings, as temporary appearance, temporary manifestation of a deeper underlying and never-changing reality. When we die, we don't turn into something else. We go back into being what we were before. And oh boy, I wish I had this thought myself, because I would be a rich man, or at least a very important man. No, the thing is that the essence of this thought has been around almost since, you know, mankind has left the caves. These very concepts can be found in the Rig Veda 30 centuries before a Christian era, so about 5,000 years ago, and they reverberate. You find them at the core of all spiritual traditions. So we take ourselves for what we're not. We are scared because we think we are something which in reality we are not. And what is it that we really are? The sea, this underlying, undifferentiated reality out of which we temporarily emerge, and we have our lives and our stories like the waves do. And like the waves, when we crash onto the rocks, we go back being what we were before, what we've always been.
That's perfect. I can't add to that. We're going to go to a break. We are talking with Dr. Piero Calvi Parasetti. The book, Adventures in Psychical Research, and Piero's website is drparasetti.com, drparasetti.com. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few.
Hello, my name is Lauren Halpern, and I'm a Reiki master. I enjoy bringing peace and inspiration to people. I conduct healing circles with inspiration, meditation, and Reiki at different community developments, religious institutions, and many other locations. People react so wonderfully to my events. For more information, please contact me, Reiki Touch by Lauren, at 954-464-0087. That's 954-464-0087, or email me at laurenhalpern@gmail.com. laurenhalpern@gmail.com.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Piero Calvi Parasetti. Our sponsor is Reiki Touch by Lauren, and she can be reached at 954-464-0087. And before we get back to our show, it's time for some foundation updates for our listeners. We want to let you know that when you shop on the internet, that you should keep Forever Family Foundation in mind by doing one simple task when you shop. You can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, without sending us any money at all. Since many of us shop on Amazon.com, using any of the Amazon links or book links on the Forever Family Foundation website to take you to the Amazon site is the only step you will need to take before you start shopping. This will result in a donation from Amazon to us based on a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart. And if you don't shop on Amazon, that's not a problem either. There's another way to be certain that almost all of your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation without you having to send us anything. Visit iGive.com. Sign up and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Go ahead, it's free, and just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,500 online stores that you're probably already shopping in, like CheapTickets.com or Gap. How about Home Depot and J.Crew or Victoria's Secret? Valentine's Day is coming, so please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. The Holiday of the Earth Raffle 2015 is up on the website, just waiting for your entries. Win up to 5 medium readings with Forever Family Foundation mediums Lynn LeClaire, Renata Santarelli, Renee Buck, Amy Utzman, and Tracy Bray. The drawing is Earth Day, April 22nd, so get your entries in, as April will be here before you know it. And don't forget to mark your calendars for the annual Afterlife Exploration Retreat in Chester, Connecticut, this July 24th through 26th. The event page is up on our website, and reservations are already coming in for this exciting retreat, limited only by the 48 rooms at the guest house. Early bird pricing has begun, and a mail-in form is included in our brand-new Signs of Life magazine, coming to a mailbox near you soon. Visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org for all of our event links, information, and registration. And if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Piero Calvi-Parisetti, the book Adventures in Psychical Research. Piero, I know that among your studies, you did a lot of work poring over the data that was produced by mediumship research, and you had the opportunity to sit with and observe a bunch of mediums. I know that some of the mediums were less than evidential, and then some were very good, and then even had the opportunity to see some superstars. So you ever contemplate what might account for this vast range of accuracy? Did you find it unusual? Did you have some people think that all mediums have the same level of accuracy, but that's far from true. I'm sure you would agree.
It's like saying that all people have the same sports skills or yeah. musical talent. It is simply not true. And I mean, if I look at the musical side of my life, I mean, whatever little level I have today has been achieved through blood, sweat, and tears. I'm not gifted. I'm not naturally gifted. I had to work like a slave for 40 years to get to, as I say, whatever level I have. My wife, on the other hand, who does not know a C from a D, as in musical notes, who never trains, never warms her voice, never rehearses, has the voice of a goddess and can sing 5 parts harmony on the spot, and that's a gift. Same applies for mediums. It's exactly precisely the same thing. But what is also very interesting is that we understand that this gift, this talent, this faculty, I don't know how to call it, changes for the same people. You might have heard in my book, my recounting the story of Dr. Ian Rubinstein in the UK, who's a GP, a general practitioner, very well respected in London, and, you know, as run-of-the-mill, as middle of the road, rather, as they can, who one day discovers to be a psychic. A medium, not a psychic, a medium. And the story is fascinating. His book, Consultant Spirit, is really a fascinating read. And I'm in touch with him. He's a delightful person, and he keeps telling me. Yeah, I remember you've had it. You've had him on the show, right? And I'm amazed because it's something that he repeats quite often in our exchanges. How frustrated he is at the fact that there are periods in his life when this gift is very strong, very usable, delivers a lot of results, and other moments, other periods in time when it doesn't get anything, and he cannot account for this. It doesn't have an explanation. And funnily enough, he says the periods in which he is more open and more sensitive and gets more information is when he is highly stressed and tired, which is so counterintuitive for us. To conclude, because this is again an interesting question with many facets and many dimensions to it. I don't think whether or not I liken or I am impressed by the mediums is really not the question, not the point. What's interesting and important is to see that even readings which seem very little evidential, if you analyze them in detail with this method which we call reverse probabilities, we find out that it is very difficult to conceive that a medium could have produced that information by simply guessing. And that's very important. And that's something that bereaved people who go and see a medium should take that into account. They should, perhaps that's a suggestion, a humble suggestion that I make, they should either tape the session or make notes of what is being said, so that beyond, over and above the impressions and the moments during the sitting itself, they may go back to their notes and say, oh, but this is in fact is true. And how could have the medium guessed that? And that's one point. And if there's another point, and yet another, when I say point, I mean elements of evidence. And if in one reading you have four, five, or six quote-unquote hits or pieces of information which is accurate and specific for the sitter, that makes for a very good reading, because it is almost impossible, it's unlikely, close to the point of impossibility, that the medium would have produced that information just by guessing.
We unfortunately don't have, we only have 2 minutes left, but this is a question that probably takes a longer answer, but out of all the disciplines of research that you've studied, what do you think, or do you have an opinion on what provides the most evidence about survival of consciousness? I mean, is it near-death experience? Is it deathbed vision? Is it mediumship? Have you thought about that? Like, which you think is the most convincing?
No, for me personally, I have my preferences, but it's because I find certain things more interesting than others, and it's just, you know, an idiosyncrasy of mine is my own take on things. I think that I keep saying that I don't consider any area, not even any element of evidence, any area of evidence as proof. I don't think that we're looking for proof of an afterlife here. What is essential is the collective weight of the evidence. The fact that you have large areas of research in completely separate, independent domains, independent from each other, and everything points to the same thing. And that is what is really convincing. You know, you can also, it is very difficult, but if you really want, you can disprove or debunk, as our skeptics keep saying, a few pieces here and there, but the mass is so big. And there's different, perhaps a dozen areas, you've mentioned many of them, you know, from deathbed visions to near-death experiences to instrumental transcommunication to mental and physical mediumship. There's, you know, a number of areas, they are all consistent with each other. And that is what I call the collective weight of the evidence that convinced me.
Well, we couldn't agree with you more. We're coming to a close. The book, Adventures in Psychical Research, it's a wonderful book. It's not written as a textbook. It's for the general public. It's easy to understand. It's very insightful. You should pick it up. So the website is drparacetti.com. Puro, thank you so much for being with us tonight. We look forward to speaking with you again and seeing you soon.
Bob and Fran, as usual, has been a great pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from all participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind as we visualize the healing light upon Donald Peterson, Judy Pernick, Andrea, Richard, Brian, Karen, David Mello, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Andy O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Stanley Mullen, Glenna Irwin, Lynn Austin, Michael Tim, Patty Potter, Eileen LaFada, Wendy Lippa, Barbara Russell, Tom Donahue, Tim Donahue, Doug Berry, Philip McPhee, Johanna, Joe, Arthur and Bernice Goforth, James Rafferty, Eddie Roll, Tracy Lee Nash, Jean Lash, Vicki Steffi, Rita Springer, David Haith, Ann Hutchinson, Barbara Petillo, Judy Beischel, Miriam Pierschka, Jeanette Davies, Rachel Scandarian, Kimberly Saavedra, Donna Mello, and now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.